Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the pro wrestling quiz show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.
This is a different Zoom lady. I'm the account owner. Whatever. Seems fine. Welcome back, everyone, to the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Jesse Collings. And joining me today is a returning guest. He's one of our favorite Canadian guests. I have talked about this before, that like being a top Canadian guest on this show is a very competitive contest to see who that can be. And getting a real opportunity here to get a leg up on everyone is Mr. Warren Hayes of The Warren Hayes Show. Warren, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Jesse, for having me. It is indeed competitive. I had to best Griffin Peltier for the spot today. It's always very competitive. What am I? I think this is a three-peat for me, right? This is my third appearance, if I'm not mistaken.
It's at least the third one, if not the fourth.
If not the, I do feel like a proper gentleman now. At this stage here, I think it will be difficult to challenge how much of a gentleman I am now moving forward. I feel I'm going to get really fancy, like the guy on your show art.
Yes, a great piece of artwork developed by Jeremy Sexton. I don't think he gets enough credit for that, because he did a great job creating our logo when we switched over to the Voices of Wrestling Network. It's funny about the name, because the name I kind of just have, you know, tossed out without like an enormous amount of thought into it. But it's very funny, like when guests come on or when I go on other shows, like I was on the NWA, the Nubian Wrestling podcast last week or 2 weeks ago, and they're like, "We're gonna get gentlemanly. Look, gentlemen." Like, they were like really into the gentleman aspect, and it's funny that people think about that, because I to me, it's just like it's just the name of my show, but other people seem to really get a kick out of it, which is
funny. I get a kick out of it. It was especially, and I know Lyric, and I'm sorry, her name is escaping me, that you had on your show 2 weeks ago, mm-hmm. a couple of weeks ago, right?
Danny.
They had the same. Yeah, exactly. They were like, they brought it up too, and I was like, yeah, exactly. And I was like,
yeah, gentle woman doesn't sound right to me. No, like there's got to be a better, like I guess you would say like ladies and gentlemen, but lady sounds informal. Like,
yeah,
I've thought about that. I thought about how gender inclusive is my name and the name for the show, and the answer is not really.
But it's a state of mind, right? It's more that than anything else. It's not necessarily a thing about gender. It's more like, where are you in your thought process in regards to pro wrestling? How are you able to discuss it? Can you discuss it like a gentleman or like a Twitter bottom dweller? Right.
That's essentially correct, Warren. That's exactly the point of the show, which is like the reason it's called that is because like when I was creating it with Jason Unpresser, we wanted it to be like not a bunch of hot takes. Like, we're going to mm-hmm. take an issue and we're going to discuss it in as intelligent of a way as we possibly can. And we're not going to be focused on, like you said, like bottom feeding Twitter bot nonsense. And that, you're right. That is the point of the show, which is a good transition to the topic of today's show, which is really just taking a big picture look at All Elite Wrestling as we record this podcast on Friday, May 31st. I think it's probably not going to go up until next week. Like I like the idea of rolling out the podcast on like a Monday, as opposed to, I think, like Friday or Saturday is not optimum for people's schedules. But obviously Monday is. And I think that AEW is at a really interesting and important place, I think, in the minds of a lot of people. And I'll start with this. I think the last 6 months to a year, AEW has been a much more frustrating promotion than it was prior to that time period. And I think there are a lot of different interpretations about what direction the company is going in. And I wanted to talk about this in the really big picture because I feel like so much with All Elite Wrestling, the discussion is based around what just happened, what happened on last night's episode of television, what happened at the last pay-per-view, what happened, you know, last week. And it kind of that leads to a lot of change and discussion and people, I think, giving a lot of time and thought into things that maybe are not that important in the long run. But I think if we take a step back or several steps back and look at the big picture of like where this company is headed from a business perspective, where it's headed from a creative perspective, where it's headed from just an overall what the product is like perspective, I would say that there is a lot of different types of frustrations that are emerging from fans. And I would say that in general, the business metrics are, I don't want to say concerning, but they could be better, I think is a fair term. I think the television ratings have fallen down a little bit. The 18 to 49 rating has not been great. There have been some, you know, pretty middling attendance numbers for a lot of shows, especially TV tapings. So there's some, like I said, concern is a term I really want to stay away from, right? Because like the trolling and oh, is AEW in trouble? I don't think AEW is in trouble, and I'm not concerned about the business metrics like spelling doom for AEW. But I am interested in trying to discuss and figure out maybe why some of these things are down over the last 6 months to a year and what could possibly be done to fix them. But I'll ask you, Warren, as I like to think of you, Warren, as a very positive-minded individual.
Okay, thank you.
I like to think that you are, you know, you're often focused on the good of pro wrestling, which I like to think of myself as well. It's like I'm going to focus on the things that I like and not try to complain so much about the things that I don't like. Especially in terms of a company like AEW, which has largely given me tremendous enjoyment over the last 5 years. But what are your kind of just, you know, big picture perceptions of the company over the last year? And kind of have they changed from where they were maybe in like 2021, 2022?
I think there's my thought process meets up quite a bit to where you are right now. I think that I thought last year for the at least from spring moving on, I thought that that AEW was in a very strange place. Thought we were far away from far removed from what. Not only what we had been promised. I know a lot of us go back to that, you know, to the when Tony Khan and Cody were running the gauntlet and doing the grassroots press conferences and talking about sports-based presentation and how we wouldn't do interviews in the back and so all that stuff. You know, I know we go back to that a lot, but you know, when you're promised something and then you get it taken away, you know, then you can ask why it's been taken away, I think. But yeah, so on that front, I think it's changed from what we were promised, but also from what we were indeed given. You know, there have been a lot of changes after AEW was launched in regards to what was promised, but it always maintained I feel a very solid foundation, nonetheless, of even though we're not like a pure sports-based presentation, you know, it's not like New Japan in America kind of thing. Even though it's not like that, there's still a very solid foundation, which lasted for a good amount of time, where this was a promotion that you could rely on to have great matches every week, right? Not just good, great matches every week. You'd have you'd have these long strips of time, week after week. I myself do an AEW Dynamite review show on my end of things every week, and I remember there was a period of time where I would be screaming into, shouting with glee, that's better, into my microphone, how spoiled we were week after week to just have such tremendous, great matches. And then you'd have these kick-ass promos from some of the best in the business, all grouped together and just delivering incredible mic work on top of that. And for some reason, things started to pivot. And I really feel like it's like we had, if we, let's say we talk about a year. So we go back to spring 2023. And I don't know, I feel like I'm going a little all over the place here, Jesse. Real, corral me back if I'm getting too scattered here.
Well, can I ask, like, you do you feel like the product, what you talked about, like the week-to-week television, seeing the matches, seeing good promos, do you feel like that isn't happening anymore on AEW television? Do you feel like the quality of, we're talking about, like, I think, like, the peak quality of stuff where you would see, or at least the consistency of seeing something that's extremely high quality, not the whole show being super high quality, not great segment, great segment, great segment, great segment, great segment, but more like, oh, each episode at least has one, you know, notebook match or really memorable promo. You feel like the shows do not have that at the same consistency that they once
at the
did?
at the same consistency. No, they don't. They mm-hmm. really don't. And I think it's a peak and valley kind of thing. Like, I think, and it's really weird, right? Because I for the past 2 years, I've noticed this pattern where, you know, in 2023 and in 2024 this year, we start the year and things are tremendous. Like, AEW has this pattern of starting off the years really, really strong and going into Revolution, and everyone is excited. And then Revolution, at least for the past 2 years, has been, you know, extraordinary show. Revolution 2024. I personally would qualify it as legendary. It was a tremendous show from top to bottom, and the buildup is great, and everything feels good around the product. And then spring comes along, and then somehow there's a shift. We don't exactly we don't focus on the same things as much. Things shift into a mode that doesn't resemble AEW. Last year, we had MJF and the Brochachos that started to simmer and then went full-blown over the summer. Nowadays, we have, you know, the we've got the Young Bucks doing the Evil Authority figure stuff, and these are angles that take up a lot of space on the show. So, like, I see, so, but this is despite the fact that leading into Revolution, things were going great. The Continental Classic last fall was tremendous. Like, the Tony Khan came, you know, asked us to put our money where our mouth is, and we did, and it delivered, and it was tremendous. Like, I had a great time right up until Dynasty this year. I felt the show was in an upswing. But for some reason, like I said, again, we're getting into the spring and stuff feels off. We get reports that Tony Khan is a little scattered. Last year, we were blaming the upfronts. We were blaming this, you know, CM Punk being CM Punk, you know. This year, oh, now we're talking about the media deal. Like, is it cyclical, Jesse? Is there something like in the spring air that just, you know, that causes Tony to lose focus?
Well, like, the pet theory is that, like, he gets really into the NFL draft given his position with the Jaguars.
Of course.
And so, like, when it's like NFL draft season, which would be like from the Super Bowl up until late April, he's extra distracted. I don't know if I believe that, but we have seen wrestling companies be
cyclical, right?
Cyclical based on their kind of annual calendars. I think most people would say, like, WWE post-WrestleMania up until SummerSlam is usually quite dull. And then, like, from Survivor Series until, like, the end of the year is usually quite dull by WWE standards because of they kind of build up to these bigger events. And then there's kind of a lull period naturally after that. With New Japan, it's usually pretty boring unless you're really into the real World Tag League from, you know, that
post G1.
Yeah, well, like, they have, like, you know, King of Pro Wrestling or whatever that used to be, whatever that's called now, and they have, like, whatever the November show is called now, which I forget. But they have like, you know, that few month stretch where it's kind of like, all right, just waiting for Wrestle Kingdom to happen. So we do see that in other wrestling promotions. It doesn't seem like there's anything in particular on the calendar of AEW because they don't build up to gigantic annual shows. Although you could argue the Wembley show will eventually become that, but there's no real tradition there. So it's kind of hard to identify. Really, there seems no reason for like the springtime to be a lull in AEW's creative. And it seems what you're saying, you know, which I think is pretty fair. It's not like AEW isn't trying to build up to something. Like it's kind of obvious, like with WWE, it's like they don't want to give away any of their really big matches on some of these B pay-per-view shows, the Saudi Arabia show or whatever. So they're gonna kind of be in a somewhat holding pattern until we get to SummerSlam or New Japan. They've kind of got the Wrestle Kingdom card locked into place a few months out, so they're kind of in a holding pattern. AEW doesn't have that. What seems to be happening, as you're describing, is just like a loss of creative focus and kind of. I think what is the biggest talking point when people talk about AEW is identity. And what does your product mean? And what does your brand name mean to fans? What does that guarantee when they turn on your show or they buy a ticket? And I think for the first few years, it meant great matches and great promos, like you were describing. There was a real consistency to the week-to-week product. And now there's a sense from fans that. That's not the case, that you don't really know what you're going to get. You might get a bad show, you might get a good show, you might get a great show. But without that consistency and kind of different types of personalities emerging, the more sports entertainment style angles and storylines is kind of clashing with what people originally thought of was the identity of AEW.
Yes, and I concur with that. I agree, and the consistency, I want to be sure I'm clear. There, like I said, there was a stretch where, like I said, every week after week, you'd have top to bottom just impeccable shows, every Wednesday night, and that's not necessarily, what I'm not necessarily looking for. A Brian Danielson 5-star match every Wednesday, or Hangman Adam Page having a stellar match with anyone, like a same thing. I'm not looking for just top to bottom 4.5 to 5-star matches every week. It's not reasonable, and I don't think it's a sustainable as a business model either. But I am looking for that excitement. Look, I am looking for elements that make it feel special. And I think that's what it's lost quite a bit, because I think there's multiple reasons, for that. I don't think there's one thing in particular. I think 2023 was a very difficult year for AEW as far as its identity goes, as far as its its front-facing identity, but I feel even like its own corporate identity. I shudder at saying it that way, but it's its own branding, if you prefer, within itself.
Yeah, I
And
think there's a number of different things that are going on. For me personally, I kind of, even though I totally understand what you're saying when it comes to that, there's not that level of consistency on a week-to-week basis with Dynamite or Collision anymore. I still struggle to really see to get that, rankled by maybe a slightly less good product, because I still think even like a Dynamite that would be considered one of the lesser Dynamites is still to me significantly better than like 99% of all weekly wrestling shows that we've had aired in this country. I still think that even AEW at a lower standard is significantly better than anything WWE is producing on a weekly basis. And so in really historically what we've been given as wrestling fans is it are we getting 4.5-star matches every week? No, but we're still getting a much higher quality in-ring product than I think there's ever been presented on weekly television. So I'm still like kind of in the phase where it's like, I'm just really grateful to have this wrestling product that I'm enthusiastic about, even if it's not quite at the level that it once was. Now, that being said, you mentioned something about like the identity and perception. And I'm of the belief, if we're looking at the big picture thing here, I think the entire CM Punk situation from, you know, from the workers' rights promo and that reaction onward has been a real detriment to AEW, and the company still hasn't recovered from the perception and chaos that situation was caused, even though both sides have moved on in a lot of ways, and that no one's wondering when CM Punk is going to come back, and there's no like power struggle within AEW between CM Punk and his enemies there. Even though we've kind of moved on past that, I still think the company, you know, I think CM Punk, in kind of the way that situation ended up working out, took away a lot of the positive vibes that fans had towards the company. It turned, you know, fans of different parts of the company against one another. And, you know, you had the collision people like the collision show because that's the Punk show, and the Dynamite show, the Dynamite people like the Dynamite show because that's the Young Bucks show. And it was just a really unhealthy atmosphere, I think, for being a fan. And it was also compounded by what you said, kind of like the corporate identity of the company, which I know Brandon Thurston always kind of pointed this out, which was like the backstage and politicking intrigue and the kind of storylines that were there were more interesting for people than the storylines that were being on television. And by not Tony Khan being very, you know, mum on details, talking about what was going to happen and things like that, opened the door for a lot more speculation, a lot more rumor mongering, a lot more attempts for sides to get their version of things out and in the public. And it just didn't help the company at all. Whatever intrigue there was based on like people tuning in to wonder what's going to happen, you know, has been very short term. And I just think overall the perception and vibes the company were really damaged by just the entire CM Punk experience. And the company is, I don't want to say the company is never going to recover from that, but they're never going to feel the same way after, you know, that whole situation has worked its way out. And I think we're seeing that now, even though we're far removed from the, you know, CM Punk's, you know, firing of AEW, and he's went back to WWE, and, you know, he says he's happy there, whatever, like they're out of each other's direct way at the moment. But I think they're going to have to, they're never going to get that kind of honest, fresh, like that virgin feeling of being like this pure new fresh wrestling company. I think that's gone with what happened with Punk, and you're never going to get that feeling back. So people that are expecting to get that feeling, it's not going to happen. It can be great again, but it's going to be in a different way.
Mm-hmm. I agree, that feeling. I'll even go further. Like, it's that feeling that we had in the first couple of years where you felt like it was a team effort, right? You felt like everyone was banding together, and, you know, the locker room was just all, you know, sunshines and rainbows and, you know, you know, campfire songs and bed ins and whatever, you know, like everyone was pushing towards the same thing, you know, which was especially prevalent or obvious when Mr. Brody Lee passed away. When he moved on, like, you could still feel like this unity that everyone had. And a lot of people were attracted to that, you know. I myself, as an old time, you know, as someone who's watched wrestling for a long time, let's put it that way. I'm very cynical when it comes to locker rooms, where at some point I'm like, no, you know, at some point they're all going to try and eat each other alive, because that's just the nature of the beast, and it's fine, you know, that's how wrestling goes. So it was unique to see, and I think a lot of fans were attached to that, especially the newer fans, which is fine, don't get me wrong, by the way, but I think a lot of them were attached to the idea that they felt that the locker room was very united and everyone's working towards one same goal, as opposed to everyone, you know, putting up fences and trying to guard their spots, which is what a usual locker room is. Whether you like it or not, adding a guy like CM Punk, you know, and look, I was there. We talked about it. I was in Chicago when he came back. I got the hell over there from Canada over to the United Center to see him. So, you know, I'm not trying to minimize and go poo-poo. No, I was interested in this. It's a historical moment. It was a big deal when he returned. But are we bringing that outside element into the law, into your locker room, a guy whose personality and backstage shenanigans are very well known, must have been quite the shock to that nice little ecosystem that they had in AEW. If the locker room hadn't already started to be more wrestling than buddies and pals and My Little Ponies, might be exaggerating a bit here, but you get the point. If the locker room had already started going down the regular path of a wrestling locker room, CM Punk coming in sort of cemented that. It was like, okay, even before the workers' rights promo and everything that ensued, I think that was a turning point. Even though a lot of us had come together, we had high hopes because Phil looked energized. He looked happy. Like, he looked so free and just light. He seemed legitimately happy to be doing this again. That we all sort of, you know, well, maybe this time it'll go well, you know, but obviously history proved us wrong on that front. So I think the identity issue goes back a long time, and I think they're still scrambling to find something. That's why I think we saw, that's why when we look back at the past couple of years, like the past year, I should say, where we see a more heavy reliance on sports entertainment type presentations, you know, skits and, you know, how and backstage interviews and hidden camera stuff, you know, the more that we get more and more reliant, we got more and more reliant on that, then switching back to something more sports-based, you know, the Continental Classic, and a lot of people got excited for that. Going into Revolution, we got the big matches. They're all just pure, straight-up wrestling matches. And then we move away from that again. Now we're back doing angles, big stories. And it really does feel like AEW is trying to find its identity. And what's frustrating, I think, for fans like myself is that its identity isn't all that difficult to find. It was there before. It was successful. And I think you can easily look how everyone got excited when the Continental Classic happened. You know, when it was something that just popped up, that arrived and helped us, get a nice big gasp of fresh air after being clouded by the Brochacho stuff for so long, right? Its identity, I think that's what's frustrating. I think this is what leads to this, you mentioned it, right? The week-to-week minutiae of breaking down every little thing that we didn't like, you know? It's like, oh, she said Titantron, you know? That kind of stuff, you know?
that stuff never, like, bothers me, I guess. It bothers some other people, but I think of that as like week to week kind of little stuff. But I think that a lot of that discussion about the little stuff, and people argue, oh, that little stuff builds up and it leads to big stuff. But I think that the issues that AEW has can be identified as just a few key core issues that, if they could be resolved, could change things. I don't think you have to scrub down into every little crevice of the company and make sure that any little thing that they're doing is wrong. Because I think historically wrestling has told us that wrestling companies can be wildly incompetent in many, many different ways. But if they get a few big stuff right, business can boom. Mm-hmm. And I think when we talk about the identity of the company, I think it's important to look within the context of pro wrestling history that we're talking about 5 years now from the creation of the company in 2019 to today in 2024. When we're talking about 5 years in pro wrestling, that used to mean like an eternity. You could take five-year chunks of different wrestling promotions and look at how radically different the product was. You can look at, what was WWF like in 1994 versus what it was like in 1999? What was, Jim Crockett Promotions like in 1982? And what was it like in 1987? And we could see these really big jumps. And I think that in like when people would talk about the WWE product being so boring and generic for years and years, and the same people being in the same spots for a decade, and people would be like, wrestling isn't like this. Wrestling's supposed to move. And whether or not you think, AEW is significantly worse off than they were from a product perspective in 2024 than they were in 2019, or even where they were in like 2021, 2022, it's really the natural state of things for the identity and tone of a company and a product to shift. Whether or not shifts in a direction that is more in your favor or more in the favor of the general population of fans, or maybe it falls into some traps and becomes problematic in some ways, it remains to be seen just exactly where that is. But wrestling naturally evolves, and no company stays the same for a while. And that's why I think the focus needs to be on how can we create something new here, as opposed to how can we go back in time to when people liked our product better, like 2 years ago. I think that's the real question you need to ask yourself.
Now, I agree with that. I absolutely agree with that. But here's the caveat that I'd add to that. If your identity is shifting and your metrics aren't going along with it, like it's not doing good, you laid it all out at the start of the show, ratings, attendance.
Right. There's tangible business evidence that suggests that the current direction of the comp product or the direction the comp product has been going for the last year is not resonating with the general fans, and they are losing interest because of that.
And one of the basic, one of wrestling's strengths as a form of entertainment is that it gets this immediate feedback, and it is nimble enough to pivot at any given moment to try and change something, right? As opposed to if your TV series isn't drawing ratings after episode six and you've canned a full season, well, okay, we have to get through the other six or seven episodes left, and that's all we can do, right? Whereas if your wrestling product is not resonating, if you're filling 2,000 seats in a 12,000 seat arena, you could in a week shift things around and say, all right, this isn't working, or this is working, we're going to move this to the top, or this isn't working, we're going to tone this down and move it around. And don't get me wrong, based on the last two decades of pro wrestling, Tony has been able to pivot faster than whatever Vince has done, because Vince's attitude, for no pun intended, is that he would continue to force feed. He's like, no, you are going to like this. You are going to buy Roman Reigns as a top baby face.
Late, late guy, stage, you know? Late stage Vince.
Late stage Vince.
Younger Vince was fairly observant, at least enabled.
I just want to put it on record that Jesse is defending Vince McMahon here. I just want to put that on record.
I'm going to have to take a shower like immediately after this. But I mean, the combination was always people would look at like how consistent he was in trying to get Roman Reigns as a babyface over versus like when he tried to get Lex Luger over, and he gave, it was like almost a lesson of how stubborn Vince was trying to get Lex Luger over, and then he eventually gave up after like 10 months. as opposed to Reigns, it was years and years, and he never really gave up.
Exactly. And all joking aside, you are right. You know, when Vince was a promoter, as opposed to what he turned into, it was a completely different. He was a completely different guy, and he was able to smell the money, so to speak. And I think, look, if the Brochacho, like ultimately in the span of things, the Brochacho stuff lasted what, 4 months, like a little more than a fiscal quarter. And then we decided to move on to something else. That's not bad in the grand scheme of things. When you take a step back, you know, we're going to talk about this. We talk about the Brochachos like it's this dark period, you know, like this long drawn out hole, creative hole in AEW, but it lasted like 4 months. It's not so bad in the grand scheme of things. And Tony maybe belligerently decided to do the Continental Classic. I think he wasn't enchanted by the idea. I think he was a little frustrated with the reactions of the fan base. I think he expressed it in that way. But nonetheless, decided to switch and go and do something completely different, right? And okay, let's do the sports-based entertainment. Let's do that. Let's go to Revolution. Let's have Sting's retirement and, you know, do all the other great matches that were on that card as well. Let's have Danielson and Zack Sabre Jr. You know, it's like, he has been able to pivot. But I guess the question I have is, and we're circling back to the identity question, if your identity at first was a certain expectation and you were drawing crowds, you were having really good ratings. You were doing very, very strong business overall. And you were doing that, and you decide to pivot towards something that didn't work, and then you pivot back, but then you go back to something that resembles what didn't work. Like, why are we flip-flopping so hard, I guess, is the question I'm asking. Why... Like, because it's not even like trying a little something here and there. It's like full blown Brochacho, Timeless Tony, you know, all of that stuff.
So when we talk about like the MJF Adam Cole storyline, and then you can point to like the Young Bucks evil general manager, evil EVPs, evil authority figure storyline. We focus on those because they're like major storylines. They involve, you know, major wrestlers. They might be over the world title, they're headlining major matches and pay-per-views and things like that. But AEW to me is always a very diverse kind of company, which has a lot of different things going on. I don't know if the problem is inherently like Tony Khan being like, our new identity of the company is this, or our new identity of the company is going to be more sports entertainment, more goofy shit. I don't think that's how he operates. I think that wrestlers in AEW, especially the biggest stars, have a lot of autonomy over what they're going to do. And that leads to a wide range of different types of storylines and storytelling. Bryan Danielson's and Jon Moxley's programs look and feel a certain way. I think they look and feel the way that a lot of hardcore AEW fans would like the product to be all the time. People like Chris Jericho and MJF and sometimes Young Bucks, they feel a different type of way. And I think that is the key distinction, not necessarily a general philosophy or strategy that Tony Khan is implementing. I think it's just because the top stars in AEW have a lot more autonomy than they do in other companies, certainly than they do in WWE. And the product is going to reflect what those people want to do. And so you need to, if you wanted to create a firm, strong identity for the company, you need to get everyone on the same page, and you have to be nixing a lot of ideas for stuff. And I think that's the key. I don't necessarily see it as a bold, you know, strategic initiative that Tony Khan takes as much as it is these are the voices in the room, and everyone focuses on some ex-WWE creative people or writers that have popped up in AEW. But I think it really ultimately comes down to the biggest stars in the company, because those are the people that are responsible for their own creative direction or have the most influence on their own creative direction outside of Tony. And I think that's why we get a lot of these distinct different feels for AEW as opposed to maybe a more clear-cut general product.
Okay, here's my counter argument to that. Tony is the booker, and he is the guy that ultimately everything gets filtered through, right? So
Yeah, I don't mean to absolve Tony from this decision making. I just think it's less of a case of him making personal creative decisions and more of him allowing the wrestlers on his roster to have a lot more creative control over what they're doing in a way that conflicts with maybe the general philosophy that other people have about the company.
And more power to him, because I'm sure that there's a lot of wrestlers on that roster who enjoy that their ideas are not like stonewalled, or that you have to pitch goofy ideas for them to for the booker to go like, yeah, we'll do that, pal, you know, kind of thing. I'm sure there's a lot of wrestlers who appreciate that, but you know, I the idea of the idea of this diversity and lots of ideas going on can only be sustainable to a certain point before someone has to, because if you have a booker, I'm trying to say too many things at once. If you have the booker and his job is to filter everything, then ultimately, yes, he has to have a vision for this. You know, if you're a director of a movie, and the actor, you know, you have the script, you have the actors who have their ideas, you know, it's like, oh, well, you know, and getting their input and for how scenes should be done, and you have the cinematographer who has a way to shoot these things. Ultimately, it's the director who makes these final calls, and it should be Tony as well. So Tony inherently should have a vision, and if his vision is hodgepodge, well, I mean, then what you see is what you get, you know. It's like ultimately it'll be a we will continue to have, or at least I will continue to have, but you and I, discussions about AEW's identity. If it's a little bit of everything, if you're trying to do a lot of everything and there's no cohesion, there's no through line to what you're doing, then yeah, it's just going to be a little scattered all over the place. And then you'll have a show where there'll be interference in every match, there'll be kendo sticks in every three matches, and then you're like, well, don't people talk to each other? Yeah, but Tony okayed all of this. That's if that makes sense.
What's going on, guys? This is Rich, co-host of the Flagship Podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network. We'll get right back to your show. Just want a brief moment to tell you about a sponsor that we have here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network, Arena Club. Now, Arena Club, man, they're great for card collectors. If you're a card collector out there, this is the read for you. And in this hobby, you know, I know you know, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up. We think, oh man, here's the 86 Michael Jordan Fleer rookie card. It's going to be in this pack. It never is. It's never in that pack. And usually you don't have zero. You have zero transparency on available cards and hit rates. It's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing slab packs from ArenaClub.com. The only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each and every one. And when I buy slab packs from Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. And I've talked about before, I go to card shows, I grab random packs, I have fun opening them, but I know there's nothing good ever in there. There never is. There's never going to, why? That's why they're available to buy, because there's nothing good in there. That's not the case anymore with Arena Club slab packs. They're better than those mystery packs because they have a display of available cards. They have a display of the hit rates. They have a display of the grading. You know exactly what you're getting. It's transparent. And Arena Club, more than that, they're an awesome place for collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying. If you're a card collector, you get it all at Arena Club. Now, Arena Club slab packs are revolutionizing the repack game, like we said, with full transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed into your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. And the Arena Club grading process is great. It's fast. It's accurate. It's transparent with a full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. You're not putting this thing in an envelope, send it out to the mail, and then get back a number. Oh, it's a 6.2. Why? It's a, whatever. Too bad. We just said it was 6.2. No, you get all of the rationale, all the explanation of how your card is scored and how it is graded. And man, Arena Club, whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. But there's even better news here, because right now you can get 10% off your first purchase at Arena Club by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Make sure you use that link to get the 10% off your first purchase. Again, arenaclub.com/VOWnet. That is a crazy offer. That is 10% off of your first purchase of anything. If it's a $400 slab pack, you're getting $40 off immediately just by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Anyways, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase. arenaclub.com/VOWnet, 10% off your first purchase. And we appreciate them for sponsoring the Voice Wrestling Podcast Network. Now, back to your show.
Yeah, and I think what we're getting at here in general is the real issues with AEW are almost entirely on the creative end.
Absolutely.
I don't see AEW has the talent and has the roster to really put on a consistently amazing product. And a lot of companies can't say that. Like, I think right now New Japan doesn't really have the roster to like find its former glory. I think there's a lot of talent development that needs to take place in New Japan. There needs to be better roster utilization, things like that. I just don't think the roster is strong enough to be where they were at 4 or 5 years ago. I don't have that problem with AEW. The issues with AEW do come down to a creative perspective and a lot of the things that you're talking about. And I think I want to get this point across, because I did this survey of AEW fans and gratefully got about 1,600 respondents. And I asked, you know, what are some things you would like to see AEW could improve upon? How could AEW make you a bigger fan of the product? What are some ways you can see it them doing that could make them better? And really one of the consistent ones that was said was not necessarily like I need stories all the time, but consistent stories and progression for wrestlers. And I think that is a real identifiable issue within AEW, is that there are tons of talented people in AEW, especially younger, more exciting wrestlers that haven't been on TV a ton. And fans really want to get invested in these people. They really enjoy seeing everyone. This is true in like almost everything. It's especially true in like sports. Like, people get excited about young people with potential. They're always the most popular players tend to be on the younger side. That are exciting and fans want to see more and more of them. And it's true in pro wrestling as well. When you debut somebody that has potential that the fans start to kind of bubble an excitement about, they want to see more of that person. And AEW has not perfected a trajectory for some of these people. They have a really big roster. They have a lot of TV time, but they have a really big roster. And creatively, they don't always have things for everyone. And I think that more than anything is something that Tony Khan needs to get a better grasp on moving forward as a product. Because when you have people like Daniel Garcia and Konosuke Takeshita and Ricky Starks, if he ever, you know, if he's still with the company or whatever's going on there, but these talent that people are starting to really get behind, but they're just not consistently in strong positions to do so. And getting those people and being able to put them on a star trajectory with creative plans for them is, I think, what's holding back AEW from evolving into a really prominent next stage of its existence. You have your day one stars. You have, you know, Chris Jericho and the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega when he comes back. You have your kind of crop of original people you were trying to push up the card, like Hangman Page or MJF or some of the, or Darby or Orange Cassidy, which are kind of your success stories in terms of being able to make individual stars. For 5 years into the company, who is going to be that next wave of stars? I think like Swerve is there, obviously, because he's a world champion. I think Will Ospreay is there in terms of someone that's going to be around for a long time. But you need to get more consistent with moving some new people into these positions, and you have to give fans a reason to really care about them. And you could be sitting on the next huge, huge star in pro wrestling, but you got to put that person in a position to succeed. And I think there's a lot of talented people in AEW that haven't been put in the position to succeed because there's just not a consistent reason for them to be on TV each week and to do meaningful stuff. And I think that's really ultimately what's got to be figured out by AEW if they want to evolve into, again, their next strong phase of the company.
I would even say it's a weakness because the guys that you mentioned, you know, Garcia, Starks, they've all had their time in the sun, like, you know, and in big spots, and it's the follow-up that completely failed. And that's, of course, that's something... That's something that's been discussed over and over again. And I think you could add Willow Nightingale to that pile. You know, I wouldn't call her a failure, but I believe that with the reactions that she gets, you know, she's not entirely like a 100% homegrown, but because she's been doing wrestling for a while, but she definitely became a star, a name, in AEW. And I think Tony has always underestimated how important she could be to the company, not just the women's division, to the company. I think she's super over. Another guy is Orange Cassidy as well. We all thought he was losing up last year. And now he's, you know,
people mention Orange a lot. And like, I get that he probably could have been pushed higher up the card if necessary, but Orange is always in storylines. He's always on television. He's got a match on every pay-per-view. I don't really see his, you know, is he ever going to win the world championship? Probably not. But I don't really see his position as much of a problem as I do with someone like Garcia or Takeshita. Or any of these other younger people. And I think like Willow, who I think, you know, was at least in my survey, was by far the most popular women wrestler. And is a homegrown star to the fan, in the eyes of the national audience. You know, was never in WWE before. She is someone that potentially looks, you know, it looks like she's going to feud with Chris Statlander. That's good. But she should really be pushed on TV every week, wrestling all the time, having segments all the time, if they want her to reach her potential as a drawing card, which is ultimately where you want these people to be at. And it's very competitive to get this time on AEW. It's very competitive to get TV time, get spots on pay-per-views is extremely competitive. That's why we see a lot of multi-man matches and things like that, because they're just trying to give these people something to do. It's a real challenge, but I think it's ultimately what the company needs to figure out the most. I don't think it's necessarily, we need less sports entertainment. We need less of this. We need to have this strong identity for the product. I think that's all important, but I think really what people want to see more than anything is a path forward for people to evolve and take steps up the card until they are, if they continue to get over, you know, the world champion. That's what pro wrestling is really all about. I think that's what a lot of fans like these days. They like investing in wrestlers when they're young and seeing that pay off. And it's difficult when you have this path forward. And I think the big decisions that have to be made in their risks, and they're not popular decisions, but you have to phase these older wrestlers that have been on TV and in main events for a long time out of the picture. Like, you could say Chris Jericho, right? You can say Chris Jericho because that's the person everyone would point to right away. But like, I think of someone like Jon Moxley, who, look, I love Jon Moxley. I think Jon Moxley entertains me every week. I think he's a compelling personality. I think he's been arguably the most valuable person in AEW since the company first started. I have nothing bad to say about Jon Moxley, the wrestler or the performer. But he's been on TV for 5 years. He's been the top guy for 5 years, or a top guy for 5 years. And that's a really, really, really long time within the history of professional wrestling. And in most situations, he would have moved on. In the old days, he would have moved on to another territory, or he would have jumped back to WWE, or he would be gone. And that would create an opportunity for a new wrestler to step into that void and take up the Jon Moxley spot, which is an incredibly valuable spot that one of these younger wrestlers could really deliver on. But we live in this environment where wrestlers, you know, you would, if you're AEW, never get rid of Jon Moxley. Like, you would, like, that's stupid. And it is kind of a stupid idea. And it would be a total risk, and it wouldn't be popular, and it might totally backfire. But historically, that's what's happened in pro wrestling. You know, both oftentimes beloved stars exit the company, and that creates TV time and opportunities for new stars to pop up. And those new stars don't always fill the boots of the old stars that departed. But historically, we've looked at, you know, look at when wrestling has really popped and when wrestling has really boomed and when new stars have been created. It's been because other wrestlers left and they needed to create a new star, and they left that opportunity. You can look at WWF, Bret Hart leaves, you know, towards the end of 1997, Shawn Michaels retires early 1998. You know, the year before that, Kevin Nash and Scott Hall had left. And what happens? It creates a new opportunity for Steve Austin, creates a new opportunity for The Rock, creates a new opportunity, you know, for Mick Foley to seize a bigger part in the company. And you could point to, like, kind of any boom period, and that's kind of what happened. Mm-hmm. And I think if you want to see that trajectory pay off, you're going to have to start looking at some of these older wrestlers and being like, okay, we can't dedicate that much TV time to you every week, even if they're still in awe.
Sure.
And those are the tough decisions you need to make.
And they are difficult, and there's the whole question of loyalty as well. You know, let's say you're Tony, and you have to have that discussion with Jon Moxley, who has always been there for you, who has, you know, set personal things aside for the good of the company, who's always been the, you know, in case of fire, break glass guy, right? Like, he's always been the guy who's turned up. And then you have to try and phase him out. Maybe Jon Moxley is not a good example, because I also think he's a guy who understands and loves the business enough to go, yeah, okay, if it's my time, boss, you know, it's like, okay, I get it.
Yeah, well, you can also, and I, with Moxley and Danielson, you can phase them down too. And like, Jericho has been phased down. I don't think Jericho's ever going to win the world title again. I'd be kind of surprised if he ever main evented a pay-per-view again. I guess with more pay-per-views each year, it's possible. But he's a mid-card guy now, and has been for a while. But he's still getting a lot of TV time, and he's still, you know, I look at the company like this. There is a certain class of wrestlers in AEW that I would say are like in the top tier class of AEW wrestlers in terms of how important they are to the creative of the company and how important they are to the show, which is basically like, are they on every single pay-per-view? And those wrestlers, like, you know, when healthy, Chris Jericho, Jon Moxley, MJF, Bryan Danielson, Kenny Omega, Hangman Page, like, these are wrestlers that the company is always like, all right, what are they, you know, Tony is looking at whatever his booking meetings are. He's like, all right, what are we doing with this person? What are we doing with that person? And there is an elite class of, like, you know, with injuries and missing time, there's some differences there, but it's like seven or eight guys. Mm-hmm. And then really everyone else is kind of fighting for the scraps, fighting to get that big singles match on a pay-per-view, which might only happen once a year, fighting to get into that multi-man ladder match, fighting to just do something. And that's a very difficult place to be. especially as the company continues to add talent and they bring in people like Will Ospreay and Kazuchika Okada and Adam Copeland, who you're paying a lot of money, so you have to have them on the show. And obviously all those guys are great performers in their own way. And it's not like they're not worth it, but it just creates this really competitive environment that I think squeezes out talent that is not seen as valuable to the as valuable yet to the company, even though in the long run they could be the most valuable wrestlers of all.
Well, I mean, this goes to your point that you were making earlier, which I agree by the way. It's like, you know that it's not a conducive what is the proper conducive environment to elevate new guys, right? And you mentioned it, you know, like you said it yourself, right? They're looking for TV time. They're looking for spots on pay-per-view. Jesse, would an extra hour of Dynamite fix all our woes? Would that it's been discussed, and it's been discussed in the past. Now that that the TV deal discourse is back, it's something that has risen to the surface again. Would a 3-hour Dynamite fix the problem, or does history exist and remind us that it doesn't fix your problem? It just adds more of what you need less of, you know?
Yeah, I think like I don't think the amount of TV time AEW has at its disposal is the issue here, necessarily. I think that it's creative focus that's the issue.
Sure.
So if they add that extra hour of Dynamite, or Rampage became 2 hours or whatever, I don't necessarily think that would be to lead to dramatic improvements. The AEW pay-per-views are already extremely long. It's one of the main criticisms of them. It was certainly one of the main criticisms of Double or Nothing, was the show was too long. So it's not, I think there's a point where both the fans can only invest in so many storylines at one time, can only invest in so many wrestlers at one specific time. And I think creatively, whether it's Tony Khan or the other people that have creative roles within that company, they can only focus on a certain number of stories each time, at any given time. So I don't know if an extra hour would give you some more TV time. Would you be able to get some more matches each week? Absolutely. But it doesn't really solve the long-term issue, which is...
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
No, because the third hour for me, right, takes me back to Nitro, when everyone was really excited about the third hour of Nitro and all of that. And what did it end up just being? Well, it was an extra hour of commentary talking about the NWO. you have a cruiserweight match going on and the table's talking about, what is Eric Bischoff up to? What is Hulk Hogan going to do? That scumbag, Randy Savage or whatever. That's all what it ended up being. It's just more, you're just getting more of what you wanted less in the first place. I wanted to bring up the third hour because it's often this idea of Dynamite being longer as a bomb to help ease the pain of not seeing your Kenosuke Takeshitas, your Daniel Garcias, your Ricky Starks, your Willow Nightingales every week. They could be in a position for more, they could be in a bigger position for more prominent, in more prominent matches. Or you could just end up, or the creatively, what happens is that you end up in the same spiral where it's just, you continue giving more of what we're already getting instead of providing more different directions. You're just extending what was already on offer. You know what I mean? And I'm with you. I don't necessarily think that's the problem. I remember when Dynamites were just like, nothing would ever breathe on the show, where you'd just be like, a match would end, ding, 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 and immediately Excalibur would be like, look, we're going, backstage to this thing. And, you know, okay, you know, guy basically just had his arm raised in victory, and we're cutting to something else. So I, you know, I think the pacings of the show are fine. I think it's that's not the problem. I just, yeah, like, maybe this all goes back to what we were saying earlier, you know, when we were talking about, you know, the decisions, the, you know, we were talking about identity and all of that. We're bringing, you know, I'm bringing it up again, but you can make, you know, your, let's say your under 30 development, let's call it that way. You can make your under 30 development part of your identity, part of your show. It, you know, it's one of the main criticisms that we have regarding New Japan right now is that, you know, we have all this crop of new guys, but the new guys don't feel important, right? Mm-hmm. Because it doesn't feel part of the identity. I'm not saying that this is what AEW is doing. What I'm saying is that it can become part of your offer, of your identity, as opposed to, well, what are we doing with Daniel Garcia this week? It's more like, well, what are we doing with the young guys, period? This is what we're doing with the young guys. If that makes sense.
Yeah, and you've got to pick some of these people and really go all the way with them. You can't just be mm-hmm. like, oh, we'll use this person for a 3-week program and then move on to someone else. You've got to pick, and they've done that before. Like, they clearly picked MJF from the very beginning as a future top guy, and they, you know, very, you know, methodically brought him along up until that level where they made him the world champion. I think a lot of AEW's booking issues can be solved really by just a focus on just looking at it. It's easy to book things in your head. It's easy to start a wrestling, like I said, I shouldn't say it's easy to start a wrestling promotion. It's obviously very difficult, but it's easy when things are first starting and you're kind of laying the tracks down. And everyone, you know, Tony had his first 4 world champions picked out in his head, knew when he was going to do it, that kind of thing. But we're now 5 years into the booking process. Tony Khan has spent 5 years as a booker, which is a very long time in the history of professional wrestling to be in one promotion and be the booker for 5 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, burnout takes place, but just eventually so much stuff happens that you no longer can really have a cohesive master plan like you could when you were first starting out. You look at over the years, what can possibly happen? You have, you know, wrestlers getting injured at inopportune times. You have personalities clashing. You just have wrestlers who maybe don't get over the way you want them to get over. Maybe they start getting more of a heel reaction, so they have to turn heel when you had them penciled in as a babyface. And there's just so much reactive work you have to do to keep everything humming. And it's extremely difficult. It's much more difficult than when the first year or two, when you're laying the tracks and there's all this opportunity that can be seized by wrestlers. I mean, it's a great time because if Darby Allin came into the company now than when he did in 2019, he would be nowhere close to as successful of a wrestler as he would be. Mm-hmm. But when he came in 2019, there was a real opportunity for a young guy to step in and be pushed as a legitimate future star. Same with Orange Cassidy. Same with these other guys. Like, if Darby Allin came in now, he would be like, used the way like, I was gonna say like El Hijo del Vikingo, but he's been injured. But, you know,
I think it's a fair comparison, or like a Commander,
like a guy they can throw out there and have some exciting matches, but is not going to be put in singles programs, really, is not going to be getting a lot of pay-per-view time, because the company has, it's just such a more complicated and competitive space, and that's not necessarily a good thing for moving these young wrestlers along. And it's a lot harder to do the creative booking. I mean, God forbid Tony Khan gets asked any questions like these, because I do feel like he would open up about, you know, what are the major challenges between when he first started and what they're doing now, and kind of how you try to focus on elevating wrestlers while dealing with all these other things that are going on. And I feel like, because I do feel like he'd be open to answering those questions, but
I agree.
He never really gets asked them. But I'd be fascinated to know from him, like, how that perspective has changed from when the company first started to where it was 5 years ago. And I think a lot of these criticisms about the tone of the product and the identity of the product and kind of where things are going, can be attributed to just this. It just becomes a bloated, unwieldy mess. And being able to navigate that mess and being able to get that clear creative vision done is very, very, very difficult. And it's never going to be done in a way that satisfies everyone, especially in a company like AEW, where I think everyone kind of has their own imagined version of what the company should be like.
Which again, however, should fall onto one guy, despite all the different visions, it has to be one guy's
Well, I'm talking
vision.
about visions that
But
fans have, which is like, I
oh
think,
yes, well then, yes,
not
yes,
just
that's
the
fair.
wrestlers, but I think that's like with this idea, like AEW more than any other wrestling major wrestling promotion, because it's not an institution like WWE or New Japan or All Japan or the NWA or whatever. When AEW, because as it was a major startup wrestling promotion, people projected a lot of what they thought was missing in pro wrestling onto that company, and
Well, to be
part.
fair, they also projected themselves into saying
Yes, which
we're
was
going to
smart.
fill the hole.
Which was
Yes,
smart. So
absolutely.
I'm not blaming fans for this, but I'm just saying and nowadays it becomes, I think it becomes harder to satisfy the fan base because I think everyone has their own individual expectations based on kind of their own personal pro wrestling preferences, as opposed to a company like WWE, a company like New Japan Pro Wrestling, where when they do things, even if you don't like them, it kind of falls back on, well, this is WWE, this is kind of what they always do. This is New Japan, this is kind of how they always do. But in AEW, you get these really kind of funny, in a way, like really contrasting viewpoints from fans about what the product should be in a way that you don't see in really other wrestling promotions. I don't think people really like to use New Japan as an example, like people really just fight about, like, you have one people that say, like, New Japan should be this type of wrestling, and then you have people would be like, no, I love New Japan, but it should really be this completely different type of wrestling. But you do get that in AEW where you have fans that are like, has to be super sports based, almost like borderline shoot style pro wrestling, take everything super duper seriously. And there's other people that are like, no, it's got to be fun, and it's got to be, with these fun personalities and that kind of thing. And you do get AEW because it's kind of a, it's a big umbrella. It has a lot of different fans that are desperate for types of pro wrestling that haven't always been there on the mainstream American wrestling circuit. And I think that creates a challenge, a unique challenge that the company faces. But in to kind of get back to my point about that, is when you have that kind of dynamic, it does become difficult when you compound that with like trying to keep a creative hold on the company 5 years in, where every, the roots and tentacles of everything are all over the place, and it's trying to clean that up and organize it. I really think that this is implausible because of the way the finances work. But like, imagine if AEW just went away for like 3 months, like they had an off season where they just didn't produce any product whatsoever, and then came back. Like, where the hype would be, how much of a clean slate you could kind of wipe things off, like a real off season. And I know people have talked about that, like wrestling doesn't have an off season. How could that benefit pro wrestling? And there's many ways that it could. And it's very unrealistic for this to happen, but I do think that would like hypothetically benefit the promotion tremendously in the long run. Just being able to have that period where fans can mentally take a break from freaking out, and we can get away from like the day-to-day granular minutia discussion around the company. But it can also provide like, all right, we're going to start from ground zero again, because that's such an easier place to work creatively than it is to just constantly keep things going and feed the beast.
I agree. Do we think that I know we have to wrap up soon, and maybe this will be a discussion for another time too, because I think there's a lot of elements to it. But
Yeah,
do you think
we're okay for
that
now.
okay, are we? How much do we feel that how much do we feel that people are feeling the way they feel about AEW these days is related to WWE getting hot again? You know, if AEW was at its what started off strong and had some great years because WWE creatively and in-ring wise was under-delivering, now that it's in a really good spot, you know, and is doing tremendous business, how many fans expect that now? Expect the magic sauce, that special sauce from WWE to come over to AEW? Because, you know, not unlike what you said, North American fans right now are kind of all over the place where they like, I want my AEW to be more sports. I want my AEW to have more wacky characters and stories, you know. So, yeah, and I think that's the dichotomy of the North American fan who have seen a lot of the North American fan that has, especially the modern one, who has basically only known WWE, right? So you can have people who was like, I don't want to see more WWE, or I want, you know, all I know is WWE. So if you don't do it this way, I don't understand what you're doing, kind of thing. How much has WWE success been a problem to the perception of what AEW is doing and how AEW is reacting? Yeah, I mean, I think there's a fair argument to say that there's people within the company who see what's happening at the other on the other side, and they're saying, oh, we need more of that. Look how good it's working over there, right?
Yes, I think that's a really good point, because I think what has happened is WWE's success over the last, you know, 18 months or so has been a kind of a reaffirmation of the WWE is the way that people want to see pro wrestling in this country. And that is what has to be successful, as opposed to back in 2019, where when WWE was in significant business decline year over year, the perception was what WWE is doing isn't working. Someone has to come along and do things differently to have a successful product. So that dynamic has completely shifted. So I think that's a really good point, that like the WWE success is giving people, whether they're fans or whether they are people within the company itself, second thoughts about like, what does a successful pro wrestling company in this country look like? We thought maybe it had to be radically different than WWE, but WWE's product seems to be doing quite well, so maybe we should mimic some of WWE's product. I think like a lot of this, when we talk about like the business metrics going down, attendance and ratings, and a lot of people will say like, well, yeah, look at what AEW's product has been like. It's under delivering. It's got all this bullshit that I don't like in it, and that's why ratings are down. And you know, my belief is backed up by these ratings and numbers being down, which is a factual statement. Ratings are down, and if you feel like the product is different, then it's logical to point to the product being the main reason, mm-hmm. And the things you don't like about the product in particular being the reason you think that business is down. But I don't know if we can say that as true for a fact, because I think that AEW's business numbers being down are directly affected by WWE's business numbers being up. I think there's some swing fans that were finding themselves invested in AEW when WWE was at its nadir. But when Paul Levesque took over, and to Paul Levesque's credit, the company has largely delivered on things like Cody winning at WrestleMania, like giving, you know, delivering at least big matches for wrestlers like Sami Zayn and Jey Uso that were getting over, by giving LA Knight some fodder to wrestle Roman Reigns, even though he wasn't really considered a top guy, bringing back CM Punk. Like WWE has been delivering on what some of those fans have wanted, and those fans are now back to being regular WWE watchers, and fans have a limited amount of time. If you're watching Raw for 3 hours on Monday, you're watching SmackDown for 2 hours on Friday, it's not as much time for AEW content.
They're not all sickles like us. I agree.
Yeah, and I think there's a percentage of like swing fans that are going to go with whichever way they feel, whichever product they feel like is better,
Is
and they're
hotter.
probably naturally WWE leaning because they are longtime WWE fans and they kind of picked up AEW as a side hobby, and so I think that has like a major impact, and it's not necessarily anything like AEW could really do about that. People will say, well, they got to make their product as different as WWE as they possibly can, which I agree probably helps in like the macro sense. Like, what should our business model be? It's like we're going to challenge your brand. We got to be different. We can't be exactly the same. But at the same time, it's I think you're never you were kind of lucky to convert some of these WWE fans at first into watching your product. And it would be very hard to sustain them when they feel like WWE is delivering. What you really just got to hope for is that WWE goes back down again, which is possible.
Which is
Anything is
possible.
possible. Yeah, like we said, WWE is in a hot was in a hot streak for last year. We're already starting to see, now that the Bloodline storyline is kind of wrapped up, The Rock has it seems like The Rock is going to be back, but he's not around right now. You've kind of concluded the major Cody Rhodes story. You really probably need to start another one with him at some point. We're starting to see, business cool off a little bit for them as well. And how will that impact AEW as well? If W people are like, WWE's kind of cooling off, maybe I'll switch back to AEW. I mean, this happened during the Monday Night Wars. Like we saw, WCW was hot, WWF was bad. WWF got hot, and they took those fans right back from WCW. That's what happens in pro wrestling. So I think that's a major factor. But I do think you ask a really interesting question in terms of like, does WWE success make people second guess what kind of product AEW should be delivering?
I mean, look, I make no bones about it. The WWE product is not one that speaks to me in any way, shape, or form. But I can recognize certain things that they are doing well. And I think that on top of it all, what they've succeeded in doing, and there might just be a theme to the show right here today, but they've created an identity to this era. It's the Paul Levesque era. Paul is ushering in all this new stuff, these new visions, little things that WWE fans really latch on to, the idea that they can call themselves wrestlers and not necessarily sports entertainers anymore. All these things end up being significant. They might seem silly to people like you and I, Jesse, where I myself will sit back and say, I'm not going to pat them on the back for doing the bare minimum and mentioning, New Japan Pro Wrestling on air. It's like, no, I mean, that's good for them, but I'm not going to tweet about it with a cheering emoji. It's like or a GIF. But there is an identity to what WWE is right now. You could say it was born out of necessity, and I would agree with that 100%. Where they had to create this Paul Levesque era and brand it, stamp it, mold it in wax, to make sure that you understood that this is a completely different WWE. Although that's another topic for another show, but nonetheless, they were successful in creating this identity, right? And again, it's something that is intangible, but when done right, I think fans, population, the people latch on to it. They latch on to an identity. That's why, look, yeah, I work in marketing, and when you do surveys and whatnot, and you reach out to people and you ask them, well, if the clothing store The Gap were a person, what kind of personality would they have? But it's these types of questions that you ask, but ultimately that's how people develop relationships with brands, with products. That's exactly how it works. And WWE has been extremely successful in creating an identity around what they're doing right now.
Yes, I was listening to a podcast recently and they mentioned something about like marketing and product, which was we're at the point in our society where the quality of a product is much higher than it's ever been in terms of historically where it would be. If you buy a hat, we're both wearing hats. If you buy a hat, you assume that the hat is not going to like instantly fall apart. It's not going to give you a rash. It's a hat, right? Some hats are probably made out of better materials than other hats, but they're all just baseball. Like, we're just talking baseball hats. They're all just hats. The marketing isn't about the quality of the hat. The marketing is about what kind of person would buy this hat. What kind of person are you if you wear this hat? And that's where a lot of like modern marketing seems to be at, like, targeting. And you can boil that down to wrestling promotions, and we get back to identity. Like, what kind of person is an AEW fan? What kind of person is a WWE fan? Are there distinct differences between the two? And if you're AEW, how can we send this message that you are a fan of our product?
Exactly.
Now, what is being an AEW fan? How does that make you distinct from being a WWE fan? Like Tony says, it could be that you are smarter and make more money. but you don't want to be, I don't think you want to be like antagonistic about it, but you want to say like, what is, when you go to an AEW show, what kind of image is there? And I think there is some stuff that AEW has some advantages with that. AEW's product is not as nearly as kid friendly as WWE's product. It's a lot more mature in a lot of ways. And I think that is really the key difference maker that they should be hammering home more than anything. When we talk about differences between the company, like the idea that WWE is a company for children, AEW is a company for adults, is probably the biggest distinction maker that I would make if I was AEW.
I agree. And, you know, it goes along the philosophy of the challenger brand, right? And I'd even take it a step further, you know, with the Pepsi analogy that Tony uses quite a bit. Coca-Cola and Pepsi, sure, you know, that's fine, but they're both colas, right? And the differences between Pepsi and Coke are there, but, you know, will you really turn down a Pepsi if you go to the restaurant and say, oh, we don't have Coke? You ask for Coke and they give you a Pepsi. Will you really turn it down? You're like, ah, well, okay, you know.
What kind of soda? Are you a Coke or a Pepsi person? Why?
I'm admittedly more of a Coca-Cola guy, but I've got Pepsi in the fridge right now because it was on sale.
I have a friend who's like a real Coke loyalist, and he'll
and I know, and look, trust me, you know, I know people from the South. You know, they don't even talk to them about Pepsi, right? But I think when it comes to the challenger brand idea here, I kind of would like Tony to perceive himself maybe more like as a root beer to Coca-Cola, right? Where you're like, yeah, but I will offer you something that is of a completely different taste. You know, it'll be familiar. It'll be soda. It'll be what you're expecting to a degree, but you're going to come here and you're going to be like, oh, isn't this interesting? This is completely new. Or an Orange Crush, whatever floats your boat, you know, as far as completely as non-cola products go. Sprite, 7-Up, which was the un-cola for years. We could go down that path.
This is similar to like what Brandon Thurston would say about Coke and Pepsi, like are like the obvious like two big brands fighting with each other, or Marvel and DC, McDonald's and Burger King. And one thing I always say about that is those companies are relatively on equal institutional footing. They've all been around for decades. Some of them have been around longer than others. Some of them are more financially successful than the others. But they're both just massive, gigantic institutions in their field, as opposed to AEW is trying to uproot and compete with the massive institutional field, giant in its field, which is WWE. And I think like what Brandon has argued, which is like AEW's approach shouldn't be like it shouldn't be Burger King versus McDonald's. It should be McDonald's versus like Five Guys, or McDonald's versus Chipotle, which is a product, you know, you don't have childhood memories growing up and eating this food. They're not nearly as ubiquitous as the other brands, but we're a better, superior product. It might cost a little bit more, but it's a more mature, higher thought about quality of a product. And we're never going to sell as many burgers as McDonald's, but the burgers that we are going to sell are going to be beloved and viewed as a higher quality than a McDonald's. And that is where AEW needs to be. And it doesn't have to be necessarily radically different, but the approach should be, we're not going to try to be like almost the exact same. Like, we're going to try to be different, and we're never going to be able to compete with them financially. We're never going to try to be as big as them, but we can be better than them. And I think that's the bigger strength for it.
Makes a lot of sense to me.
Warren, do you have anything else you need to add tonight?
Oh, we have added so much to this fantastic hoagie that is the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast today. Exaggerating to just add more onto this.
Yes. Okay. Do you have anything you want to plug?
Oh yes, the Mr. Warren Hayes Show. How about that? It's my own podcast where I discuss basically the week in wrestling, essentially, and I also do a weekly Dynamite review as well. So if you're into that, I would love to have you over. You can follow me over on YouTube at youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes, or just look for the Mr. Warren Hayes Show on wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts. And I'm also on Blue Sky, because Twitter stinks. You can follow me on Blue Sky at Mr. Warren Hayes and .bsky.whatever. Anyway, I'm there.
How is the wrestling scene on Blue Sky?
It's nice. You know what? Just yesterday, I had a discussion with dissenting opinions. And believe it or not, Jesse, no one was calling themselves, no one was being called names. No one was being called a drone or a freakazoid or a Vincel or whatever. No one was accusing me of being paid off. No one was telling me you're saying this because rent's due or anything like that. No, it was actually a very it was a very nice conversation with the dissenting opinions and people being just chill about stuff as opposed to, wanting to tear the house down. No, it's very good. It's improving. I wouldn't say it's at its peak yet, but it's improving.
The rent stew one is pretty funny. Like,
it is really funny.
Sorry, just like,
I got that once
on 14 Twitter. Some 14-year-old telling you rent stew.
Rent stew. Dude, I'm posting on Twitter. What are you talking about?
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Warren, for joining the show. I want to thank you, as always, as a guest. You are moving up the Canadian Power Rankings. I may reveal them. I need a Patreon page so I can reveal them behind a paywall. But I want to thank
Warren. I'd pay for that, quite honestly.
Yes. I want to thank Warren for being on the show. I want to thank all the listeners. We've gotten a lot of attention for this show. Business is going up. You want to know whose show has an identity? Sees business going up. This show. As we discussed at the top of the show, what the identity is supposed to be. It's all in the name. So I want to thank everyone, and everyone have a good week, and I'll talk to you again after a while. Hey, everybody. My name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media. We talk a lot about fan culture and wrestling's place within general pop culture. And we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.